Last week here at UMD, we were thrilled to welcome Dr. Jane Kirtley to campus to give a presentation on making or faking the news. She's a media ethics professor at the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities, and she joins us this morning on the phone. Hey, Jane, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Lisa. It's a pleasure.
So let's begin by maybe a definition. What, to your mind, is fake news?
Fake news, in my world, is false information that is deliberately disseminated with the intent to mislead or deceive. And I emphasize the notion deliberately because, obviously, journalists, politicians, all kinds of people can make mistakes. They can provide information that they know today, but in 2 days, that information may change. That's not fake news. Fake news is the deliberate attempt to mislead or to deceive.
Now, what is the difference in your mind? I remember when the first conversations about fake news started to come out, when it was known that some reporters for certain blogs or certain websites were deliberately spinning news content or deliberately making things up altogether. And that's when we first started to hear the expression fake news. But now I guess I'm a little interested in how you draw the line in the difference between fake news and just news that somebody doesn't like. And they go on maybe social media and say, fake news.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because in the last couple of days, there have been several reports coming out from organizations like the Committee to Protect Journalists that monitors threats to freedom of the press around the world. And they pointed out that more and more autocrats around the world are now using fake news as a way to basically undermine confidence in independent media. And that's, I guess, is my point in answering your question, that people in positions of power, whether they're politicians or powerful business interests, or just ordinary people who are choosing to go to those sources of information that reinforce what they already believe, what the psychologists call confirmation bias. If they don't like what another site or another source is saying, then they'll just say, well, that can't be true. And if you think about what's happened in the last 10 or 15 years, where it's become easier and easier for people to just sort of tunnel in and go only to those sites that reflect their view of the world, that doesn't challenge that in any way, you can understand, I guess, why if they do find themselves presented with information that challenges what they believe, instinctively, they aren't going to want to believe that's true, and the rallying cry now is that it's fake news.
How did we get here from Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America? And we watched the evening news in our living rooms on our black and white television sets, those of us who are of an age, and we had faith in our news media.
Well, I think there's a couple of factors. The kind of the macro factor, the broader one, is that I think there have actually been attacks on media credibility for a very long time. In many respects, that's not a new phenomenon. But they've been well orchestrated, well calculated, and they've come from the right and the left as well. You know, there are those on the left who criticize the mainstream media. Thinking of the last election, they would say because they marginalized Bernie Sanders. That's one claim. Others would say on the left that, well, they're dominated by corporate interests. They don't really represent the interests of the public. So you've got that. And then you've got all those on the right who just constantly say the media are liberal, they are biased, you can't believe a word they say. And I think that steady drumbeat coming from both sides has caused people to question the sources. The other thing that I think is kind of paradoxical is that mainstream establishment media, when they make mistakes, and they do make mistakes, they typically publish or broadcast corrections, clarifications, often apologies. People that do not come from the mainstream media sometimes don't do that. They make a mistake and they leave it hanging out there, and they'll say, well, through crowdsourcing, the truth will eventually come out. It's not my problem to deal with that. So when you put all these pieces together, I think you're left with a great deal of skepticism. And I don't really mind skepticism. Journalists are skeptical, and I think it's fine that the public would be skeptical of journalists as well. But this is much more fundamental. This is essentially assuming that anybody you disagree with, any news source you disagree with, basically has it in for you and the people that you agree with and are deliberately setting out to misrepresent what's going on. I've read those kind of comments a million times on sites like the New York Times and the Washington Post. I'm sure you and your listeners have seen them too. There really are people out there who are simply convinced that conventional media have an agenda. Exactly what that agenda would be, I don't quite know. But they would say they have partisan leanings and that they're going to promote a particular political agenda, and they'll make things up to accomplish that. And, you know, this is the antithesis of the way the news media in this country have operated, at least since the Second World War. I mean, before the past century, it would certainly be fair and accurate to say that our print media, which was really all we had at that time, were partisan. They typically were affiliated with political parties, and there was really no hiding that or any suggestion that that wasn't okay. But after the Second World War, there was a much greater movement towards objectivity in journalism and the notion that although you could editorialize and express an opinion, your news coverage needed to be sort of straight down the middle. We've drifted away from that for a whole variety of reasons, and I think that there are a lot of people that have equated that with the notion that, well, then you must be lying.
Well, and the idea used to be, too, that if you were going to editorialize, that you clearly marked it as such. You said that this was a commentary, or you identified it as an editorial so that people knew that the reporter was stepping out of the reporter's shoes and into the this is what I think is a person's shoes.
That is true. And I think, you know, what's I think significant about that is that some of the cable news networks, I'm thinking of Fox particularly, but I think you could probably say most of them do this, kind of seamlessly go from their news reporting to their pundits or their commentary without the kind of clear distinction that you're describing. In the case of print media, if you buy a print newspaper today, you'll still see the editorials and columns and opinion columns segregated typically in a different part of the paper from where the news appears. But if you go online, it's often a lot harder to draw that distinction. I mean, some people would suggest that many readers never fully appreciated that distinction anyway, but whether they did or didn't, in the online environment, I think it is sometimes much more challenging to determine when a news organization's publishing commentary and when they're publishing news. And I certainly subscribe to the view that there should be a clear distinction between the two. I think commentary, there's no hold barred. They can take whatever positions they choose. News is different, and, you know, facts are sacred. I mean, that may sound corny, but it's really true. All of the journalistic codes of ethics that anybody in this country would be likely to subscribe to talk about that, about seeking truth and reporting it and not distorting and so forth. These are cardinal sins in a journalistic world, at least for the conventional media.
So the repercussions of people in power who demonstrably lie, who provably say things that aren't true, the repercussions of fake news so that people maybe wonder and are not as sure how they're going to be able to tell what is real and what is not. What are the repercussions of this as you see it down the line?
Well, for me, it's one of the most profoundly disturbing phenomena of at least the current century, that we no longer have sort of a received basis on which to judge objective fact. I think, again, conventional news organizations go out of their way to try to, as we used to say in arithmetic class, show our work, you know, to explain how they gathered the information that they have and identify sources and sometimes now provide links to, the basic documents, that kind of thing. I mean, they try very hard, but I think for many people that somehow isn't quite good enough, or, again, if it doesn't reinforce their current belief, they'll simply reject it out of hand. The concern is that if there is no belief that you know, fundamentally, we have sources we can go to that will tell us the truth. I think that erodes public confidence, not just in the press, but in the institutions of society as a whole, you know, what some people call civil society. You know, forever, you know, in this country, we've certainly had people say, I can't believe everything I read in the papers, you can't trust politicians. None of that is new in a general sense, but I think it has escalated to a level that I've never seen in my lifetime, and I'm not that young. I just look back on it, and that this degree of cynicism, and I think it feeds into pessimism and fear. These are not good traits for this country. This is a country that historically has been pretty courageous and pretty optimistic. I mean, we've been the envy of the world because we have those characteristics, and it's disturbing to me to see those eroded, because if we don't have confidence in our fundamental institutions, then I don't know how we move forward from this very polarized environment that we seem to currently be in.
One thing that is very helpful, though, is that you have a list of some tips and some suggestions that folks can use to at least start to vet for yourself whether or not, you know, a friend shares an article and you look at it, and there are some tips and some ways to tell if this is a reputable news outlet and if there it, and to kind of vet for fake news. One thing that I've noticed is spelling errors and grammatical errors are kind of a dead giveaway.
They are, you know, although I have to say, and I'm a steady reader of the Washington Post online because I lived in Washington for many years, and, you know, they've cut back on their editors, and so it's not unusual to find typographical errors in even online Washington Post stories, and usually some reader comments immediately that they've messed something up and they try to correct it. But, yes, spelling errors, and I would also say more to the point, the use of sensational language. You don't typically see that in mainstream media stories, you know, and especially if they're using all capital letters and lots of exclamation points. Those are unlikely to be coming from conventional news media sources. You know, if you're looking at things online, it's useful to just look at the URL that you've got there. There are increasingly numbers of doubtful quality websites that have as the end of their URL .com.co, and that often is a sign that we're dealing with something that's not at least what you might expect it to be. You know, any legitimate news site will have an About Us section, which will tell you who they are, who owns them, which I think is a significant point, who their editors are, who their publisher is, what their mission is. If the mission is an ideological one, then that's a sign that you're not dealing with a conventional mainstream news organization. Again, there's not to say that a group with a mission or an agenda is always going to be lying. That's not at all what I'm trying to say. But it's simply that you should be using your critical faculties to try to evaluate what this group is and if it's what it says it is. Another thing we look for is citing sources, named sources ideally, but again, you know, government reports or credible scientific reports or whatever might be appropriate. Providing links to those things, which is now possible with the advent of digital media, extremely useful so you can look at the documents and judge them for yourself. If they don't have those kinds of things, if they're just making allegations without really any kind of factual underpinning, then I think, again, you need to ask yourself. And that's not to say you'd have to reject it forever, but you might want to do some more research to see if other sources corroborate what they're asserting.
Jane, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us. In case folks unfortunately missed your presentation at UMD, it was wonderful to have you hit some of the high points and answer some questions for us. Thank you again so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lisa. It was my pleasure.
Dr. Jane Kirtley, our guest this morning here on Northland Morning.